Good afternoon, everybody. So we are back for a next session on some academic presentations where the community is involved. I would like to introduce to you Godwin Yeboah. He's a senior research fellow from the Institute for Global Sustainable Development in the University of Warwick in the UK. And we just figured out that he actually studied together with one of my former PhD students. So I'm happy to hear that. Well, this is a small place. And Godwin is also a member or a fellow of the Royal Geographic Society, and he's interested in the assessment of and contribution to open.
Hello, everyone.
Specifically looking at sustainable development. And he's going to tell us about a huge project where he was involved and where they went in with communities into informal settlements and looked at the accessibility of the communities to healthcare services. So I would like to switch over now to Godwin's presentation. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Godwin Yeboah, Senior Research Fellow at the Institute for Global Sustainable Development, based at the University of Warwick in the United Kingdom. The title of my presentation is Examining Spatial Proximity to Healthcare Facilities in an Informal Urban Setting. This study is co-authored by myself, Professor Joel Porto de Albuquerque, who is the director of the institution where I work, and Dr. Olalekan John-Taiwo, who is based at the University of Ibadan in Nigeria. The logos of our collaborators are shown below, and that of our main funder is at the top right corner. As an overview, I'll highlight our ongoing project, which is led by Professor Richard Littlefield, as well as the research questions which guided this study. Next, the methods used in the work will be presented. I'll then show some results and give some concluding remarks. The following research questions served as a guide for this study. What are the differentials of spatial proximity to healthcare providers in informal settlements like slum? What are some of the lessons learned from using OpenStreetMap-based mapping approach for slum health research? These research questions are explored using an ongoing research project. The title of our ongoing project is National Institute for Health Research, Global Health Research Unit on Improving Health in Slums at the University of Warwick. The goals are to map health services and facilities and understand how these are used in slums across Asia and Africa. To build on these maps, to identify costs associated with how health services run in each site, to build models of health services and use these models to look at ways of improving health service delivery. Throughout these goals, we are collecting existing evidence and also involving people who can change things in slums, including politicians, civil servants, people who live in slums, and OpenStreetMap OSM community who can help generate quality baseline maps. The duration of this project is approximately 4 years, ending in March 2021 and costing over £5 million. There are 5 work packages designed to address the goals of the unit, cutting across geospatial mapping, household survey, evidence synthesis, health economics, and stakeholder engagement. And the results in this presentation is mostly drawn from work package 1, which is about geospatial mapping of slums. It is important to note that the principal investigator for this project is Professor Richard Littlefield, and Professor Joel Porto de Albuquerque is the lead investigator for the work package 1. There are 5 partners in the project, 2 in Asia, 2 in Africa, with the lead institution being the University of Warwick. In Africa, we are working with the University of Ibadan in Nigeria, where 3 slums are being studied. These are Shasha, Idikan, and Bariga. And we have also the African Population and Health Research Center in Kenya, where 2 slums are being studied, Korogocho and Virwandani slums. In Asia, we are working with the Aga Khan University in Pakistan, where Azambasti slum is being studied. And we have also the Independent University of Bangladesh, where Kurao slum is being studied. In this presentation, the results are taken from the green highlighted slum, that's Shasha. Shasha has relatively less dense buildings with density of about 1,700 buildings per square kilometer. The buildings are not that tall and mostly have roofing sheets. Shasha is the biggest slum when compared with the other slum sites and is about 1 square kilometer. I will now talk about methods in this study. In terms of methods used in this study, an OpenStreetMap-based data collection approach was used to map and survey healthcare facilities, among others. The healthcare facilities were then grouped into 4 main categories. Spatial proximity and seniority measures were then computed to assess geographic access to different types of healthcare facilities. Discrete statistics were used to describe the computed spatial proximity measures, whereas person correlation between network and Euclidean distances was also computed. Reflective exercise on lessons learned during the data collection was also undertaken. One thing we are doing differently is that we are systematically adapting OpenStreetMap to develop a spatially regulated sampling method in health research in a multi-country informal urban setting. The study protocol is published and cited here. We frame the production of informal urban community data as an interdisciplinary methodological challenge and situate it at the intersection of spatial data quality on one hand and community engagement on the other hand. Traditional mapping techniques, such as those used by geomatics companies and national mapping agencies, can produce spatial data with a higher degree of adherence to spatial data quality standards. They follow strict guidelines and aim at a well-defined set of dimensions of spatial data quality. Example, completeness of map features, logical consistency, positional, temporal, and thematic accuracies. However, the application of these methods is costly, and the technical expertise required excludes inhabitants from the poor urban communities from the process. In contrast, participatory mapping techniques, such as the ones used in the humanitarian mapping community, are a good way to engage residents and local stakeholders in thinking differently about their relationship with environment and urban space. But the extent to which the resulting data matches quality requirements is often uncertain. Operating at the intersection of these two mapping traditions, we see an interdisciplinary problem space that is associated with a twofold methodological challenge entrenched in one, the promotion of effective engagement and participation of local stakeholders and residents of urban communities, with the goals of building capacity, empowering them for creating local ownership, and ensuring the sustainability of geographic data generated. And two, assessment and improvement of spatial data quality, in order to ensure that the resulting data is able to capture intra-urban inequalities and be used as trusted evidence for scientific research and policy making. To tackle this challenge, our approach is based on participatory and collaborative mapping, but in addition to the methods adopted by similar existing initiatives. The diagram here illustrates an overview of our OpenStreetMap-based participatory data collection approach. The first step involves preparation activities where training materials are prepared and responsibilities defined for subsequent steps. Also, procurement of high-resolution satellite imagery, identification of slum boundaries, and setting up of online mapping platforms using humanitarian OpenStreetMap team tasking manager are undertaken during this step. Securing access to slum sites are negotiated here, and also the core research teams in partner countries are trained at this stage. The online mapping stage involves using the mapping platform to conduct training sessions and mapathons to achieve complete digitization of the areas. We authorize mappers due to our license agreement with satellite imagery provider. The online validation stage involves correcting any errors identified during the online mapping stage by experienced mappers. The GPS field mapping stage involves using handheld GPS trackers to track footpaths and road networks in the area, with the aim of validating what has already been mapped and also densifying the network. The collected data is used to update the OpenStreetMap database at the GPS digitization stage. We then use printed field papers to verify the structure geometry in the field while recording a unique 13-digit structure code and taking field notes using a tablet. We are using two key open source tools on the tablet: OpenDataKit, OpenMapKit. Another open source technology being used outside tablet is field papers. The field papers are then scanned and used to update OpenStreetMap database online. The structure codes and field notes are kept separate from the OpenStreetMap database online. All sensitive data are stored in our Warwick OpenDataKit aggregate server. Only data declared public by respondents are uploaded to OpenStreetMap database. We end the field activities with three key surveys using the collected spatial data: household health survey, healthcare facility survey, and an in-depth household survey. These are some photographs of the online mapping events in Bangladesh and Nigeria. Involving the local community ensures capacity building and multi-level participation and mobilization. It is important to emphasize that local knowledge is also relevant in these events, which allows on-screen validation of most mapped features. We usually search for any OpenStreetMap or some community groups in the area and collaborate with them. At the time of mapping the study area, we did not find any existing OpenStreetMap community to help, but the mapping events created awareness and interest among local residents and researchers. Bangladesh was completely different and has a very strong and visible OpenStreetMap community. Also, these are some sample photographs of the fieldwork in Bangladesh and Kenya showing the involvement of the local community. More OpenStreetMap community members in Bangladesh participated in the training, online mapping, and fieldwork done in Kenya and other countries. The following are the four categories of healthcare facilities studied: 4 clinics and maternity centers, 22 patent medicine stores. These are facilities for selling commercial products advertised as a purported over-the-counter without regard to its effectiveness. 5 traditional faith healers, 1 eye health center, or a facility where an optician is based. The rural total here is 32 healthcare facilities. Literature suggests 2 main schools of thought about spatial proximity. One school considers proximity as a distance measure that can sufficiently be described by quantitative or qualitative distances. The other school aims at developing proximity measures where distance becomes a modifying factor instead of the measure itself. This study is mainly about the former school of thought. So for each healthcare facility in the 4 defined categories, shortest route network distances are computed using the validated OpenStreetMap route network. Similarly, the Euclidean distance are also computed. QGIS network analysis tool plugin, which has implemented Dijkstra's shortest path algorithm, was used for the computation. Seniority index is defined as the total route network distance divided by the total Euclidean distance. I will now show some results. This map shows an example of an updated online OpenStreetMap data for the study area. As discussed in the workflow earlier, not all data declared public by respondents have been uploaded, but this will be done by end of the project. On the left, you will see some of the hashtags used during the online mapping, validation, and grant routing stages. For example, hot OSM project number from the humanitarian OpenStreetMap team tasking manager, slum mapping, Warwick Uni, etc. At the middle is a selected map feature, which is the location of a market in the area. Shortest route network distances from most households to clinics and maternity centers are higher than the Euclidean metrics. Grand mean for network distances is 727 meters with a standard deviation of 299 meters. And the same for Euclidean is 549 meters with a standard deviation of 256 meters. The grand median for shortest route network distances is 766 meters, and the same for Euclidean is 577 meters. The grand medians and grand means for the two metrics differ by over 100 meters. Similarly, shortest route network distances from most households to patent medicine stores are higher than the Euclidean metrics. The grand median for shortest network distances is 573 meters, and the same for Euclidean is 416 meters. The grand mean for the shortest route network distances is 579 meters with a standard deviation of 256 meters, and the same for Euclidean distance is 435 meters with a standard deviation of 219 meters. In this case, the grand medians and grand means for the two metrics differ by over 100 meters, similar to the previous. Same trend here. Route network distances from most households to traditional and faith healers are higher than the Euclidean metrics. The grand median for shortest network distances is 589 meters, and the same for Euclidean is 416 meters. The grand mean for the shortest route network distance is 589 meters with a standard deviation of 240 meters, and the same for Euclidean distance is 428 with a standard deviation of 198 meters. In this case, the grand medians and grand means for the two metrics differ by over 100 meters, similar to the previous. Shortest route network distances from most households to eye health center are higher than the Euclidean metrics. The median for shortest route network distance is 490 meters, and the same for Euclidean is 372 meters. The mean for the shortest route distance is 503 meters with a standard deviation of 204 meters, and the same for Euclidean distance is 374 meters with a standard deviation of 168 meters. Clearly, for all categories, the medians and means for the two metrics differ by over 100 meters. The following are some of the lessons learned from the use of OpenStreetMap-based data collection approach. Where research teams need to host own satellite imagery, effort must be made to investigate carefully options for both free and commercial tile services vis-a-vis the imagery license. We provide here some examples of tile services we have come across. In this study, the tile service was provided by the imagery provider. Use of portable GPS devices alone do not work at the household level. Careful training of mapping tools are very vital for success of implementing OSM-based mapping for health survey. Use of field papers played a key role in data collection and cleaning. However, using this technology requires careful planning. Online mapping of road network and well-known monuments proved very useful for orientation in the field. Rooftop architecture of structures can create difficulty during mapping. Security for mappers should be a priority, and working with residents can be extremely helpful in this regard. Our OpenStreetMap-based method advances humanitarian mapping practices and addresses the twofold challenge of achieving equitable community engagement while generating quality data for research and decision-making. Ground truthing is essential for areas with high density of buildings. Field-validated data completeness estimates are usually less than online mapping estimates. For buildings, less dense areas can reasonably be used as a sampling frame without ground truthing. Roads are easy to interpret, useful, and must be mapped during the online mapping stage. For roads, field-validated data completeness estimates are usually more than online mapping estimates. Factors likely to influence quality comprise density, rooftop architecture, and mapping skills, among others. In terms of healthcare access in the study area, our study suggests that residents can access healthcare facilities within a walking distance that is under 1 kilometer. Comparatively, clinics and maternity centers are farthest from most residents. Even in this category, one facility stands out as the farthest, which is Shasha Primary Health Center. Route network distances to healthcare facilities are longer than the Euclidean distances, but there is a significantly strong positive correlation between them. Overall seniority index is 1.16, suggesting that nonlinear nature of route network distances to healthcare facilities contributes to 16% more than the Euclidean metric. Finally, this study advances the evidence base on slum health towards achieving Sustainable Development Goal 3 and promotes the use of OpenStreetMap-based mapping approach and data for slum health research. We consider the following as potential future opportunities for research. Understanding how different sociodemographic profiles of slum residents have different accessibility to healthcare provision. Application of theory of change approach in studying healthcare accessibility in informal urban settlements. Combining participatory methods with automated methods like machine learning for structure detection and population estimation. Here, the validated OpenStreetMap features can serve as training data or validation data. Improvement of workflows and mapping tools in support of a methodological framework for geospatial mapping of health and well-being in urban poor areas. Lastly, extending impact through a potential future collaboration with local partners, OpenStreetMap community, and other researchers for data usage and further improvement. This research was funded by the National Institute for Health Research, Global Health Research Group on Improving Health in Slums. The views expressed in this presentation are those of the authors and not necessarily those of the NHS, the NIHR, or the Department of Health and Social Care. Thank you for your attention, and also many thanks to volunteers from the OpenStreetMap community, as well as project partners, collaborators, and funder for making this study a reality. Hello, everyone. My name is Godwin Yep.
You're live for questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Godwin. That was a really insightful presentation, and the questions are streaming in. So,
Yes, I can see it's going to be exciting.
You can have a look at them as you are reading them as well. So let's start with the first one. The topography, did you consider that? Because the name is gone now, but then in Brazil, the favelas are really, really steep. So one has to consider the topography. Was that a challenge for you?
Yes, that was something that we thought about. I think in our case, especially for this particular study, this area is quite different from the case raised in this question. And because of this, we did not really consider it. But I concur that this is really important to consider when you're dealing with distances similar to what we consider in comparison with Euclidean distance. So certainly, I agree that in the favelas in Brazil, then certainly, it has to be considered.
And then what about security, a bit related? Did you consider that? Well, this is the security of the mappers, not the community going to the health work, the health care.
So yeah, exactly. So this is something that we carefully consider because, the mappers, we have the risk, 2 to 3 members in the research core team. And then we have also volunteers, and then some of them are already within the community. Some are also helping. So, for example, not necessarily here, but in, maybe let me just talk about this one. So here in Shasha, you have most of the mappers were mostly postgraduate students from the University of Ibadan. And certainly not all of them were within the community, I mean, in terms of being a resident. So these were issues that, we tried balancing their composition with local residents, and therefore once people get to know that their own is within the team and they can easily relate, then it made it very easy for us to address issues about security. But it's something that I learned also on the project that the slum as we know it is not necessarily security free, and you have to be very conscious of this. And also the fact that this is an area where usually is considered as illegal, or the people are usually considered as illegal settlers in some situations. So usually they are very conscious of any new phase or any new activity happening there. So if you're mapping these areas and things like that, even mapping, then that's even more sensitive, because then the assumption is that you're collecting building footprints or land, you're demarcating the land or sort of thing to cause some future maybe relocation or something like that they need to understand and things like that.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. But on the other hand, also the security of the community when they go to a healthcare center, did you consider that? Because, it could be a very short distance, but a very dangerous route.
Oh, yeah, certainly, especially for women and females in the team and things like that. So, certainly, this is something that we considered, and we discussed with local partners to make sure that this is something that is addressed.
Then the next question is about careful training of mapping tools. You mentioned that this is very important. What are the lessons learned and best practices in terms of that?
So this one was quite interesting because the for us, in terms of, it was not just like what most people usually do, that, you just map and then you upload to the OpenStreetMap database and things like that. But we also wanted to use it for survey. So that's the key thing. That means that if you take, for example, a household structure, if you map it, then you have to also find a way to link this to a particular code or something that you can use in a survey format. So in our case, we had to use a 13-digit code consisting of the first letter of the slum name, field paper code or sheet code, enumeration area, last digits of interviewer, code, serial numbering of the structures and things like that. So in a way, once that is done, we saw this as the resilient component of even for the mapping process, because then we were always able to go back and use the field papers sort of as a reference point to always trace the what has been mapped right from the, you know, the server and all the other data that we have, and even beyond that to the survey. So that was very useful for that. And also in terms of training, I would say that, you know, because the other component of our interest was to understand how all these mapping tools, open source mapping tools, can be linked together to conduct this sort of research-based, OpenStreetMap-based data collection and survey. So one thing is, you know, the people who are helping, especially the volunteers, do not have this technical backgrounds. And so even the idea of jumping from one tool to another. So for example, you start with Hot Tasking Manager, they eventually end up field papers, and then you go to JOSM, and then you go back, and then you go to ID Editor, and then they do it, and then, you know, then even with that, you have to generate tiles and all sort of things. So there are so many tools that we are trying to use, and this is something that if you're not careful, you can be in trouble in terms of the workflow.
Yeah, I think your presentation also showed that you had a careful plan of the different tools and when to use them.
In that slide.
Another question that's come up here is about, you mentioned mapping footpaths and roads. So do you think this project made a considerable difference in the coverage in that area and the completeness, or was there already a great deal of data before you started?
Well, there are some few data sets, especially for this one, when we started, but most of them hadn't been validated. That's for the structures and some of the building road networks. And also even for the healthcare facilities, actually, it was completely not validated. So because our end goal was also with the healthcare facilities, so this was something that we have contributed. Actually, I wanted to even show before and after maps just to clarify this, but I think in some of my previous presentations, I think last year in the same State of the Map conference, I think I showed some of them. But basically that is, but there were instances where, for example, I remember I recall in the case of Pakistan, the site in Pakistan, Mazambasti, there was absolutely nothing. There were buildings, road networks there, but buildings were about three or so. And then we had to map everything from scratch.
Wow. And just an estimate, the number of buildings, thousands.
Oh yeah, thousands. So this one, I think the building structures were, in the thousands. But I would say that, you know, in terms of structures, that's the case. But in terms of households, there's a difference between that. You know, you have structures, all right, but then we are also interested in dwellings. So out of the mapped structures, we tried also to, beyond the structure verification, identify also the dwellings, because we needed the households, the allocations, to do the survey.
So I assume there were more households than dwellings?
There were more, certainly, yeah. There were over 1,000 households, but then the in terms of structures, the dwellings, the structures, or the structure of the households were, I think, around almost 700 structures out of the thousands. But for the number, the households, there were more, because certainly, you know, you can have more than one or two households in a structure.
Yeah. The next question is again about the assessing the accessibility to health facilities. So this question is about whether the number of doctors or nurses for the number of people in the vicinity was considered. So the size of that health service.
Oh yes. So for the survey, we have collected a lot of data. And probably that's also one of the reasons why we had to carefully design the workflow in such a way that most of the data will go into a private server and well-encrypted database server. So we collected all sort of things: ownership, source of funding, number of doctors, number of nurses, pharmacies. So for example, the healthcare facilities, we collected things categories like clinic centers, dental clinic, hospital, secondary care provider, residential, nursery care facility, laboratory, pharmacy or medical store, general shop or kiosk with healthcare products, transportation, traditional and faith healer, and others. So there were a lot of categories. For this study, we just it's a super grouping. So we tried regrouping those from the raw data. But in terms of the healthcare survey, we have a lot of variables that we are considering for publications now.
For the study, yeah.
Yeah.
So the next question is about, did you encounter spatial heterogeneities regarding possible drivers like sociodemographics, economics, or something?
So for this study, for this one that I've just presented, is just I would say early stages in terms of, you know, starting to explore the data that we've collected. But in terms of the project, we have, in fact, that's one of the objectives. I think in the earlier slides that I showed, I think is one of the objectives. It is actually a work package, which is to understand healthcare access or healthcare seeking behaviors. So we are developing health economic models and things like that. So we are certainly considering all these, and certainly we want to also look at, like I pointed out, in the future opportunities for research. We want to look at how these measures are linked to social demographics that we've collected.
So somebody's commented here and saying that this kind of study shows or exposes or reveals the serious concerns when people that are COVID-19 infected have to travel or to walk to healthcare sites. Have you got any comments about that? I guess this study happened long before we had the pandemic, but maybe there were other infectious diseases that you discussed.
Oh, certainly. This is something that, you know, the project is ongoing, and some of the work packages, there are other co-investigators like Professor Francis Griffith and for other Warwick Medical School and other experts on the project who are looking at this, especially for the, I think, the last work package, which is about stakeholder engagement. So the strategy now has been to shift focus to the COVID-19 pandemic and look at ways in which the study can help, especially in areas of creating policy briefs with even the MABs and the findings that we have. In fact, some of the in-country stakeholders, I should put it that way, are also interested in the data that we have, and we are interacting with them.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I mean, we are busy with a study here also in an informal settlement to just review whether all these rules about social distancing and all kinds of other measures that are being put in place, if and how these are even possible in some of these settlements. I think that's a huge challenge.
Oh, definitely. And I have seen lots of news items around this, you know, how with this, you know, well, highly dense areas, how do they actually address or adhere to social distancing that has been distance measures or policies that have been put in place by government officials or the local authorities. So this is something that is a hot issue now, especially in slums, because, you know, because of this high population or dense population, and the way we know about COVID, you know, one minister from Ghana said, if you move, it moves, you know. So so far as people are moving, and there are a lot of them in a particular place, well, you know, they also move. And this is something that actually for me is very interesting, that probably in the future we will look into this.
Yeah, and I think it starts with basic things like access to water. I mean, if you have communal taps, sorry, my cat is joining us.
Excited.
Go down. Yeah. Okay. Then I was also curious to find out, you did this across the world. I think that's very interesting. So how did accessibility differ between the different slums?
Oh, yes. This is something that we've started looking at. This is just the start of the study in terms of, you know, accessibilities or looking into the data that we have. So this is just one that we've started with. And so we're going to probably look into sort of a comparative study, looking at the data we have for these 7 sites.
And the challenges in terms of mapping in the different countries, were they similar? Were they different?
Oh, yeah, very interesting. So many interesting things. I think we, in a way, we did not exhaust all the lessons learned actually on the slides that we put there. But this is something we are looking at to probably put together best practices or things like that around the lessons learned. For the sites, there were interesting lessons that we've learned. So, for example, if you take Pakistan, Pakistan has tall buildings, structures, and their rooftop is slightly different compared to the others. Unlike, if you take, I don't know whether, I think I showed some pictures for Shasha, the building structure and the roof, and it is quite standard in terms of, in terms of digitization and trying to trace structures or, read from the satellite imagery. But in their case, it was a bit tricky. And we thought we were doing a good job in the online mapping, and then eventually we realized that actually when we went to the field, it was completely different. Because then, you're there at the, looking at the building, you can see the top, but then you can't figure out even what it means. What you've mapped online, you can't figure out what it is on the ground. You can see the block. I mean, with road networks were very useful because you could easily navigate, but the structure as stands, it's very difficult to figure out the households living in each structure, and it's difficult to figure out which structure is which, things like that from the map, from the paper online map that we printed and went took to the field.
So I assume that's also why you had to, in those dense areas, go back into the ground truthing, because what you see on the satellite image looks like one building, but it could be a couple of buildings and a couple of households.
I agree. So we put it there maybe for less dense areas. That's quite relative though, but less dense areas like Shasha, then maybe that's possible because, I mean, you can easily see the buildings, and then you can easily probably figure out that you can use it for surveys. But it also is quite dynamic. It depends on every site. For example, Bangladesh is a bit tricky because the place is very dynamic, and so you have to be careful in terms of using the data for survey without field validation.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's
yeah.
I had a question. Oh yeah, you said something about that GPS on its own. It was in one of your slides. GPS on its own doesn't work well. What did you mean by that? So you had to do field papers and things like that.
Oh yeah, exactly. That's what I meant. So the GPS. We tried using it, and it was a bit difficult to, link this to every household. I'm using just the locations, and because also, I think you're also in geomatics, so you understand how GPS works. And I think probably most people listening to us, those in the GIS field, so the structures, because they are also dense, and the sky is not that open enough to allow the communication between the device and the satellites above. And so certainly you get the false impression that actually you are mapping, or you are at the structure you've mapped, you're clear on it, but then you end up seeing the point somewhere else. So because it's not really computed well, so the accuracy is very bad. And so that was one of the reasons why we used field papers, and also one of the reasons why we used the tablets, and also tiles for the tablet. So we loaded everything there after we had prepared it from the online mapping and the field validation, ground truthing. So we put everything on on the tablet, and then we went there. So the GPS, I would say, technology was used just as a guide. So it was guiding us to roughly, you know, figure out in terms of orientation, you know, the roads were helping, but also the GPS helped to figure out roughly where you are, and then you have to interpret what you have mapped, you know, the paper and also the tires on the tablet to orient yourself and make sure that you are really seeing the right structure before you start recording or you start collecting data. So that's why I think somewhere I mentioned or I put the that road networks or well-known monuments were very useful. So, you know, once you get to that where you're really sure you are well-oriented and you know the position, then you can start from there.
Thank you. Thank you, Godwin. I think we have to wrap up. We need another few minutes of a break before we go on to the next presentation. That was really excellent. Excellent work that you're doing. I think I would like to encourage you to write that up because I think it's very useful for many people in other parts of the world to work out how to work with OpenStreetMap and capturing these settlements. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And thank you, everyone, for coming.
Bye.